animals less healthy than you can't nourish you.
Are you surviving or are you thriving?
Are you too busy to live?
Do you have grain brain?
Fat was brain.
Fight for your life. Get your prescription for health today.
Is Mother Nature too good to be
true?
It's
not you, it's the food. It's a no-grainer.
Oh, that isn't happening to us.
It's already happening to you, woman. Join our army of Minas.
Keep the government off our farms.
Make it happen today.
Save the bacon.
Save the bacon.
It's time to drop some atomic mom bombs.
It's not me. It's you. Invest in your life.
Yay! Her name is Neethi.
Go save the bacon, mommy.
Hey friends, this is Neethi the pharmacist, and today I have Farmer Hayes from Fat Radish Farms here from Zebulon, North Carolina, to talk with us about organic. We're going to discuss various mediums that you can grow produce in and also efficiencies on the farm to help create more affordable food and food with integrity. So welcome, Farmer Hayes.
Thank you, Neethi.
So can you please tell us about Fat Radish Farms?
It's been in my family for several generations. My great-great-grandfather bought it in the 1800s. And my great-grandfather farmed it. The last generation, my parents' generation, it was leased out to another local farmer for quite a few years. And in 2010, I moved to the farm and took over a portion of it and transitioned it into an organic produce farm, growing a huge variety of produce and fruits. And then we added some laying hens to it to have a few eggs. And then my uncle moved back to the farm and he decided he wanted to raise broilers. And so he and my cousin were raising broilers for a while, and then my cousin had a kid, and he kind of got his hands full. So I started helping my uncle and just kind of incorporated the broilers into what I was doing. We're increasing our layers and our broilers. It's really the main thing that makes money on the farm. Vegetables are a lot harder. It's a lot more work, so your profit margin is much smaller on vegetables than it is on the chicken and eggs.
That's interesting. A lot of the farms that I talk to, they use produce to subsidize the meat. So
it has a lot to do with how we grow it. I have certain standards that I will not waver on that make it a lot more difficult. We don't spray any poison at all, period. So if we get bugs, we're either hand-picking them or and sometimes introducing other beneficial insects that will hopefully eat them. And we don't use plastic to keep weeds down. It's all hand-pulled or natural mulches. So the way that I do the vegetables is a lot more labor. We try not to till or till as little as possible because that kills your microbes in the soil. And so the way I grow vegetables is not even traditional in the organic world. So
isn't that because of the remediation that you're trying to do?
Yes.
To your land?
And I mean, the soil is really what you have to work on. You grow your soil and then it just grows everything for you. And that's one thing now where the soil I've been working with, I can just plant stuff. I don't have to add any fertilizers. It just grows because I've created a natural system again, mimicking nature. You go out and you look in a forest and you pull back, you know, a layer of leaves and you've got this rich, dark soil. You dig into it and you'll see all sorts of life in there. And then, you know, there's a whole lot more you can't see that's very important. And when you till it, that's going to kill most of those microorganisms in the soil that you need. And then that also causes erosion and loss of topsoil, which is it's a huge problem in this country.
Sure.
And
so you came back to the farm in 2010?
Yes.
And so it's been it's going on 7 years.
Yeah.
So how do you feel, what was the state of the land when you arrived?
It was pretty poor. It had been conventional farm. They'd been doing wheat and soybeans and tobacco. And when I first started, some of it, the soil looked pretty good, but there was no life. There weren't earthworms in it because all the disking and tilling that they'd been doing, the plowing for years, like it just killed all that life in there.
And the desiccating, if they were doing wheat or any of the grains, I think a lot of people, this is an interesting point, right? Like if they have, let's say they've been growing, even if they were growing what they would have as certified organic wheat, is it true that they can desiccate it with Roundup?
I don't believe they can use Roundup per se if it's certified organic. There are other quote unquote organic poisons that, you know, are allowed.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit? Because I think that there's a lot of confusion that we want to clarify. We had another discussion with one of the other farms about the branding, labeling, or whatever, and how, I think a lot of people really believe that if they buy everything organic, that it's safe.
I would say it's safer. It is better than your traditionally grown conventional produce, but there are many, many poisons that are allowed on organic produce. And personally, I don't want to eat those. I mean, most of them do come from a natural source, whether, you know, it's certain plants or like pyrethrum is a plant that, you know, I've actually grown that before. And then you can distill that and make a pesticide out of it. And so it's totally natural poison, but it's still poison. And if it's bad for a bug, it's bad for every animal.
I mean, it's like belladonna, right?
Yeah.
I mean, belladonna is a natural... I think that nature produces everything that can kill us and everything that can save us.
Yes.
So, I mean, the petrochemicals even come from the core of the earth.
Yeah.
Right? But I think that it's the way in which nature balances those.
Exactly.
Things.
And that's what, like, with the poison, I want to be able to walk out and pick a strawberry and eat it right there in the field. I don't want to have to wash it off. And even if I'm using, like, there's certain bacteria that you can apply that are, you know, fairly safe, compared to other pesticides, but it's still a poison. And if it's, you know, if it's bad for a little bug, it might not hurt you immediately, but years after years of stockpiling that in your system, you're still eating poison on your feed.
Right.
And so for me, it's just been a no spray policy period from the very beginning. We did spray for termites around the house, but other than that, we used zero poison on the farm.
You can't lose your house.
Yeah.
So I want you to talk about those standards. You know, you farm with like very high levels of integrity, and people have said to me that my standards are outlandish. You know, like I'm trying to reach for some moons or something and stars, and I'm saying, you know, like, we just want to get back to how things used to be, and establishing that balanced ecosystem is not easy.
That's one thing I've seen really change, is because when I first started, I still wouldn't spray anything, and bugs would just decimate entire crops often. You know, they just come in and within a week, sometimes they just wipe out, you know, everything. And it was terrible at first. And so I've been introducing, you know, various other insects that every year will release ladybugs and praying mantis and green lacewings and a few other ones. And what I've noticed is that as time goes on, it's balanced out the problem. And so we still have bugs get on our plants, but instead of eating the whole head of cabbage, they just eat some of the outer leaves and then leave the core alone. And so it's really, after, it's taken years to get to that point, but now that we're there, I don't even really need to spray. We'll still, you know, late in the spring, a lot of our brassicas will be covered in Harlequin bugs. And at that time, you know, it's like, okay, we're just done for the year with this. And we toss it in and let the chickens eat the bugs. So, you know, now it's a kind of a good thing because it's feeding our chickens. And that's great for them.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that people are unaware of the sacrifices that you have to make. Now, you know, I'm always saying that post-World War II, you know, America decided we needed to feed the world. And that was when we introduced all these petrochemical fertilizers and herbicides and pesticides that had never been used before. And now you have a lot of old timers who say that what you're doing is impossible and insane. And then, you know, business people think farmers are ignorant because they don't want to consider all the efficiencies that are required to be profitable. I mean, you've been sacrificing for at least the past 6 years and still, right? Like, I don't know that it's 100% efficient. You're even saying now that the way that you're producing your produce, it's not as profitable, whereas other people are using their produce to subsidize their meat production.
Right.
I think at some moment, hopefully you'll be able to see that turn around, but.
And really for me, the main reason it's not as big of a profit margin is the weeds. Because I won't spray herbicides either, and so, or use plastic out where I'm growing stuff, and
the labor is what's costing.
Yeah, and because we spend, you know, hours and hours and hours weeding, but now, like, we've started using straw and wood chips to as a mulch on top, and you know, there's controversy there that they suck nitrogen from the soil as they decompose. But then we also put the chickens on there, and then they add the nitrogen back to it.
Yeah.
And so after we're done with the crop, you know, or a certain plot, we'll put the chickens on that, let them eat all the bugs that are out there, the weeds, and then add the nitrogen. And now we're starting to go back and put wood chips on top so that it keeps the weeds down. And once we've got a good enough layer of wood chips, then it's going to make a huge difference in our production.
So you're considering all of this an investment also?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, I've put a lot of money, because I do use about 10 different amendments that when I first till up the soil, I'll put about 10 different amendments down that, you know, it's either chicken poop and kale and, or not kale, sorry, kelp, azomite, green sand, various minerals that our soils are very depleted in. One of the biggest problems with conventional agriculture, I hate calling it conventional, but...
you mean fake agriculture.
Yeah.
Industrial
agriculture.
Industrial.
And they put three chemicals down that are petrochemicals, and that's it. They don't put down all the micronutrients needed by the plants. And so that's why our food has lost over 50% of its nutrition that it naturally would have. You know, in the 1950s, a head of broccoli was really, really good for you. And now it's only half as good for you because they only put these three chemicals down, because those are the three chemicals that a plant has to have to grow. But it's not growing to its full potential. So when I first break the soil, I'll put down these amendments and get the balance back, the natural balance in the soil, so that all those micronutrients are there as well as the macronutrients. And then I don't really have to do anything to it. Like I'll add wood chips and I'll add organic matter to the top of it and then have chickens on it and let it decompose. And then that's creating food for worms, which then pull that down deep into the soil and bring those nutrients right to the roots where the plants can use them.
And that's also making your eggs more nutrient dense.
Oh, absolutely.
And the birds healthier. And I mean, how do you feel? Like, this is one of those things where I'm always interested in how, you know, there's the political movement that's happening with the veganism for health, because everyone knows that there's a loss of health. And so they're trying to find a gain anywhere. And so they can't put their finger on the problem, which we know is the animals are industrialized.
Yes.
In this, what we're calling fake agriculture or whatever. It's just industrial. You can't industrialize life.
Yeah.
And so that's what you're trying to reverse and invest. You know, what made you excited, or what inspired you to want to help to turn that around? Because there's a lot of folks out there
who don't believe that there's anyone who's vested in or interested in trying to do that. And whereas I believe that if there are eaters out there to want the food, that the farmers would rise to the occasion. And that's another argument that's happening. So because you've taken us down that part of the conversation, what do you think?
I mean, I think that there are farmers that are rising to the occasion. One of the biggest problems I see, though, is that people are used to going to Food Lion and or even Whole Foods and you know, seeing a bunch of kale for $2. And then they expect, oh, well, if I go to the farmer's market, there's not that middleman, so it should be cheaper for me at the farmer's market. But the thing is even if you're buying organic kale at Whole Foods, it was grown in California or wherever,
and
industrial farm. It's quote unquote organic, but it's still mechanized. And when you can, you know, harvest the whole field of potatoes with a tractor, it's a whole lot less work than doing it by hand. And, you know, we don't grow enough potatoes to warrant buying that. My potatoes are going to be more expensive than ones that are, you know, dug up and then washed. And I went to this one potato factory years ago in Nevada, and it was this conveyor belt of water. And like, there was thousands of potatoes. I mean, it was just a huge factory where they were washing the potatoes. And, you know, I looked at it, I was just like, this makes me not want potatoes.
Well, you know, the conventional potatoes have been doused with so much chemical that a human being cannot enter that field.
Yeah.
Without a hazmat suit. And even with a hazmat suit, I think the first 7 days, they're not allowed to enter that space. And that if someone accidentally does, I mean, they could die.
Yeah.
They have died. And they actually, like, I've seen these fields, and they have these flags along the border of that land warning you, yeah, do not enter. And, you know, you're just like,
this is our food.
I know. And then they want to, I mean, like, I'm just not, I don't know if people, I don't know why people think that it's okay to eat something that was doused with poison after it has been put on a shelf for a year, which is what they do with those potatoes. Like, they wait for the poison to wear off. And then you're supposed to be able to eat it now. And the same thing they're doing with the chickens. I mean, you know, I wanted you to talk about organic as it pertains to produce, eggs, and poultry. And I think it's interesting that they say, I don't know what the big deal is. You know, you can't even sell birds that, what's the words they use? It's the way that they say you can't sell them when they're on antibiotics. But basically, you know, you have to wait until they've met their withdrawal period or whatever, and then you can sell those right. birds on the market. Whereas your chickens have never been given
give them antibiotics. We don't vaccinate them. And we probably do have a higher loss. You know, we have more birds die from natural causes than you would if you were giving them all these, you know, chemicals, because it keeps them artificially alive.
Well, they have a 50% loss.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, we're not nearly that bad.
Yeah. No. Let's be clear. I mean, anybody, if they're in a grocery store with a barcode on it, then it's been raised in a house, even if it's certified organic, even if it's certified non-GMO project verified, which means that it wasn't given GMO feed, but not even that it wasn't given soy, which is still an estrogen mimicker. I mean, we were going to break all that stuff down. But to get back to what we were saying, just so you know, those houses start out with 20,000 birds. They only have 10,000. But that volume is still enough for to profit. So they have a 50% loss.
Yeah, and see, we don't have anywhere near that. Maybe with turkeys, because they just like to die when they're babies. But we don't lose nearly that many.
So what is your loss look like?
Oh, I'd say an average of one a week, maybe somewhere.
I mean, what does
that
look like in the grand scheme of things? How many birds? Like, if you had 200 birds, how many would you expect to lose
in a year? Probably about. Well, and a lot of those are from predators coming in and killing them. It's not like sickness, and, you know, because they are healthy. That's the thing. Like, we give them, you know, huge areas to forage, and then we feed them good feed on top of that. And
so hawks come in.
Hogs aren't so bad. Like, they'll just take one, you know, and then they'll spend a week eating it. It's the possums that I hate. They'll come in, they'll kill 60 in a night. They don't even eat them. They just kill them. So, you know, all these things on Facebook where it's like, oh, if there's a possum on the side of the road, check for babies in the pouch. And if you find them, run it over again, because those are chicken-killing machines.
Run them over. I know. People can't understand these things. They're humanizing these animals so much that they are thinking about the cycle of life.
Yeah.
In that way. So, but seriously, like, if you have 200 chickens, how many will you expect? How many will you count?
I'll count on about 50 of them dying in a year.
Okay. Out of 250.
Yeah. Okay. Somewhere around there. Maybe a little less than that. Hopefully less than that. The less that we can make that number, the better.
But they're feeding the rest of the
ecosystem. Yeah. Cause we caught, you know, they get composted and,
they're not dying because they're sick. Let's be clear.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah.
They're being lost because something else is eating it.
Someone didn't close the pen up at night or,
they're good food.
Yeah.
It's not because they're sick.
And then sometimes, you know, like once they get a certain age, like they'll die from old age, but, as everything does.
We're born dying people.
But usually the predators get them before that point.
Right. Well, I didn't mean to interrupt everything else that you were saying. I wanted to make this point clear. I don't believe that people understand that there are organic, industrialized farms.
Oh, yeah. Any organic, certified organic that you see at a grocery store is most likely an industrial farm.
Because they can't afford.
The way that I'm doing it, it's very hard to globalize it, so to speak, to make it a universal, because every plot of land, even within the same farm, is different. And so you have to take a different approach to, like, even within the same field, the soil can be so different that you have to take different approaches to the way you're growing. So there's not a universal set of rules that work. So from a company standpoint, they can't say, this is how you do it.
Standardization is not possible. So this is another thing I'm always saying, is that they have this organic standard, but standardization is not, you can't standardize life.
Right. And well, and the standards, they basically, the organic standards have been written for the benefit of massive corporations.
Right.
And so
I want to be clear, people. I want you to know that organic is not better than local. And even though Hayes is saying he can't feed as many people as an organic industrial operation.
In the short term, long term, I'll feed a whole lot more.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but your bounty is still great. Tremendous. I think that if we were to take your square footage of your, or the acreage of your farm, and compare it to the acreage of an industrial farm,
we get a lot more per acre.
Thank you. That's where I was trying to go with that. Because, and they have recalls. Yeah. And they have waste. And they have returns.
Well, that's the beauty with having the animals and the produce together. When, you know, we usually come back from the markets, not so much right now in the dead of winter, but usually in the spring and summer, we come back from the markets with a ton of food left over. And because if you've got to have a lot more, because once you if your table's empty, people stop coming for whatever reason. And so you always have to have more than you actually are planning on selling. But then, you know, I come back and I can give it to the widows in the neighborhood or take it back and feed the chickens. And they're literally getting the healthiest food that can be grown.
But so you're, from a human rights perspective, you are, you know, nourishing the community. You're growing people. You're lifting people versus the same organic industrial opposite end of the spectrum. Not only are they selling the kale at your price, and while they're throwing away 80% of it, let's be clear, and their labor is not being paid even a fair wage.
Yeah.
Right. And so from a human rights perspective, their laborers are not even able to afford their food that they're picking out of the field or whatever machine that they're operating versus how many people do you have?
One person full time that works for me. She'd probably argue I don't pay a fair wage either.
Not if she did the math, maybe. <It's> like...
And then someone, this other guy, Brian, comes in a couple times a week and helps in the morning some. And but it's, I mean, that it's difficult to, because you do, I have to price according to what the grocery store is. And it's, otherwise people don't buy it. So I have to underprice, like, I believe it's worth more than I'm selling it for sometimes. But I've gotten to a point now, it's like, well, if you don't want to buy it for that, I'll just take it home and eat it myself. Because I know how good it is. And it's so much better than what's at the grocery store. I don't want to eat junk from the grocery store anymore.
Right.
And you can even tell that, like, with the organic, which, you know, if you're out, I do believe, like, if I'm buying some from the grocery store, I'm only going to buy organic at the grocery store.
Right.
But the taste and the longevity, the shelf life of mine versus anything at the store is just so much better. Right. And I, that's one of my favorite things when I have customers come back and they just tell me this is the best cabbage I've ever eaten in my life.
Or tender.
Yeah.
They can't, I don't even understand like what they do to the organic cabbage in Whole Foods. And I'm not knocking Whole Foods. I'm just using that as an example. But organic in the grocery store, any grocery store, I retract that I said Whole Foods. It could be whatever store, any barcode organic cabbage. It's like, I could kick your butt with it. Like, I could cut you.
Well, it's one, it's harvested before it's ripe because they have to add in the shipping time. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, how long it sits at the store, how long it's in production from the, you know, farm to packaging. So they have to pick it, you know, at least a week early than it really should be. And whereas we go out and, you know, we pick everything the day before or the morning that we're selling it. And so
how is theirs so big? I can't even understand that. It's supposedly organic and their cabbage is like as big. It's so gigantic.
They're putting a lot of fertilizers on it.
And the other thing is that for the same price, like let's just say yours is the same price, which isn't fair. But if it is, I can eat less of yours. And I have to eat more of theirs.
Because there's not the nutrition in it.
Right.
And your body learns that. It starts, you know, and you feel better when you eat nutrient-dense food. Versus, because whether or not it's organic does not say anything about the nutrition. All, like, buying something certified organic does make it, you know, have certain points where it's better than conventional. That it doesn't have chemical pesticides all over it.
You mean petrochemical.
Right.
Okay.
It's
some chemical.
Yeah, it's most likely been sprayed with some sort of poison, and but they don't necessarily put all the right nutrients into the soil that plant needs to be its full potential, so to speak.
So people have this thing that the farm is dirty and the store is clean, and they're not realizing that we are immersed in nature. I mean, you know, human beings, we are animals that belong in nature or that are embedded in nature. And if we do not have food that can help inoculate our gut, perhaps you can, like, speak on that.
Well, that's another thing that you're going to get, like, from food from a small farm versus the grocery store, is you're going to have enzymes all over that. Because they're not taking it and washing it in bleach water, which most produce will be washed in bleach water and then, you know, put down the assembly line and packaged. And if it says washed, it's washed in bleach water, which is why legally I can't wash anything, but I hydrocool pretty much everything, which is putting it into water, because that's a harvesting technique, not a post-production technique. And, you know, the way
getting all these legalities, people, and you're eating chlorine on your organic lettuce or whatever. That's triple
chlorinated. And so, which that, you know, one reason they do that is it kills the enzymes, because the enzymes do break the food down naturally. And so the shelf life will be shorter if you're not chlorinating.
So they're preserving it.
They're preserving it, basically. You know, people think, oh, well, they're cleaning it for me, but really they're preserving it. And, like, you need those enzymes on the food for your body to break it down as well. And so if you get rid of all the enzymes, you don't produce them inside. So if you don't ingest them, they're not there to break down the food and actually let your body absorb all that nutrition. You know, I'll sometimes just pull it right off the ground and eat it without washing it, or, excuse me, hydro-cooling it.
Bleaching it.
But like sometimes it's gritty and nobody likes, you know, sand in their teeth. So we always do get the dirt off of it. But we're not putting it through bleach water because you want those enzymes. You want that. And you know, these bacteria and all these like healthy organisms that your body needs that you want on your feed. And so,
aren't they like probiotics?
Yes, basically.
So then I don't have to take
and prebiotics. I mean, it's like you have to eat this stuff to feed the good bacteria in your gut. You know, you can go and take a bunch of probiotic pills, but then if you go home and just eat a loaf of bread, you're basically killing all that, those, you know, all that money you just spent on those probiotics are pointless because you're not feeding them inside your gut.
Are you guys hearing this? So this is what I'm talking about when people say to me they want to do a 3-day juice cleanse or whatever, and then they want to retox, and then they don't understand like the nutrient dense produce, like what you're producing, and they need 5 pounds of that to juice 17 ounces of juice so that they can get their, that's actually like 14 servings of vegetables. No one understands that, you know, they're not getting that. Then they say that the juice makers are robbing them or, you know, something of that nature. And they don't realize
it takes a lot of produce,
a lot of produce. And if you're raising it correctly versus bleaching it. So now I don't want to drink organic juice anymore.
Yeah,
basically.
Well, and if it's pasteurized, then they've also, like when it comes to juice, you know, they'll have moldy oranges that just go in and get squeezed with all, because it's, you know, these massive presses that are squeezing the juice out. So rotten oranges go in it and they squeeze them all together and then they pasteurize it.
I think that these are so important. I don't believe, Hayes, that anyone, this is why I started the podcast, you guys, is no one's having these conversations and no one is addressing these issues. People are up in arms when they read that post. Like there's this viral post on social media that says that the baby carrots have been washed in chlorine, like in bleach. Well, guess what, everybody? All your organic produce has been washed in it, not just the baby carrots. So,
well, the baby carrots too are like rotten, like half carrots, so they have to cut the rotten end off and then they shave them down. Those aren't actually baby carrots. Those are...
You mean they don't really make baby carrots? Come on!
Carrots don't all grow the exact same size.
Yeah, guys. Okay, so this is the other thing that people hear me say is that nature is inconsistent. And so for our meat or our produce to have the consistency that people have been expecting because of the plastic food that they see in the toy bin, they want to get that at the grocery store. I told you this earlier. Hayes and I have many conversations, and so I'm really excited to be able to record some of them now. But, you know, in the grocery store, they grade all the vegetables, just like they grade the eggs, just like they grade everything else. And in fact, you know, like I've, you know that I work with a bunch of meat producers, right? So grocery stores have standards for how big you can allow your hogs to be or how small. Like they have to be a specific size before they'll accept them. And otherwise, they're not good enough for them and they won't take them. And so
it has to be uniform across the board.
Right. And, you know, and nature just isn't that way. No. And I think that going back to the integrity of food, Hayes and Fat Radish, by the way, and if you ever will get the chance to listen to Hayes's mom, I want to have your mom on the podcast. But
she's crazier about food than you are, Neve.
She's like awesome. I love talking with her. But I mean, talk about someone who is huge on food integrity. You know, people say to me all the time, like, Neve, how do you know what farms you want to work with? And I'm like, well, if they aren't caring enough about what they're eating, then I just feel like they don't care about what they feed us either, you know. Although I will say that there have been several producers who want to do the right thing and they're not eating well because they can't afford to do that because they've been kind of stuck in this commodity shift. Like you're saying, you have to sometimes price down what your food is worth to be able to have sales. Otherwise, you can't even earn any cash.
And buy the seeds to plant the food.
Right. Well, everybody wants their GMO-free organic chicken to be $2.99 a pound, like what they can find in a store. And I'm like screaming at them saying, if it's $2.99 a pound,
I'll stop raising chickens.
Yeah. And that's my final, you know, thing that I want to talk about with you. I mean, I feel like we're just running out of time here. And so we have to have you back for more conversations. I haven't been able to talk to you. I didn't even get to get into the various mediums. I mean, I wanted to talk about, you guys mess around on the farm with hydroponics versus drip irrigation versus soil. I mean, everybody's saying that all our farmers are so ignorant. And I'm like fighting for that for our my farms that I work with, because I know how innovative you have to be. I know what sacrifices everyone's making and what investment everyone is making to be able to create this food. I don't know how you guys can produce chicken, for example, for less than $6.75 a pound at your cost. And that doesn't mean wholesale, and that doesn't even mean bulk, and that doesn't even mean retail. And when you have barcode stores, you know, and I mean the most efficient.
Well, those are organic chickens, quote unquote, but they're in a chicken house. It's 10,000 chickens, because like free range, legally, well, I don't think there's actually a legal definition, so they can slap free range on anything. But organic does have to have access to outside.
Do you know that on the organic, on the website, let's just talk about the USDA organic. If you go to the FDA or USDA website, then it says it's on pasture?
No.
It says it on the site.
They have to have access to pasture. They don't have to be on it. So there has to be an opening from that chicken house that they can get outside. But the thing is those chickens are, almost all the chickens at the grocery store are a Cornish cross, which is have been bred to be these massive breasts, and they're all artificially inseminated. Any chicken or turkey you see at the grocery store, someone has inseminated that.
What? Let's just talk about that for a second. I have also been preaching to people why I don't like Cornish cross, because they don't know how to do the deed. They can't physically do the deed.
They cannot do it.
Now you've heard it from an organic poultry farmer. Say it again. It's like, they think I'm crazy when I say that.
No, they're all artificially inseminated.
But Cornish cross. Let's just talk about that for a second.
And they're freak birds. We did raise them before, and they are freaks. I told my uncle, I was like, if you order those again, I am not raising them. You have to do it yourself. They can barely get around. I had to train them, like really work hard to train them to forage. Because like that's our whole
They're
goal.
Not fighting for their life though, let's be clear. If they're unable to reproduce, okay, nature doesn't allow any animal to reproduce if it's not healthy or viable or sustainable, right?
Right, yeah.
And so now when human beings are infertile, they're going to these fertility clinics and stuff, but they're not remediating their food. They're not trying to gain their health back. And they don't, no doctor is saying to them, hey, you're infertile because you're sick. Like you're not well enough to reproduce.
Well, for me, like, you know, healthcare in this country is so crazy. Like if you go to the hospital, and this is how I know it's not healthcare, it's sick care, because you go to the hospital, you go to their cafeteria, and they are serving poison out of their cafeteria. So they're obviously not trying to heal people at the hospital.
Right.
They just want to pump them full of medications,
and
do surgeries.
The cheapest food ever.
Yeah.
It's the cheapest imitation food ever. Okay, I pulled up the Organic Livestock and Poultry Practices, and the summary is that the United States Department of Ag, USDA, Agricultural Marketing Service is amending the organic livestock and poultry production requirements based on recommendations from the Officer of Inspector General and the National Organic Standards Board. AMS determined that the current USDA organic regulations covering livestock care and production practices and living conditions needed additional specificity and clarity to better ensure consistent compliance by certified organic operations and to provide more effective administration. So it says operations must fully implement the indoor space. Let's just leave that at that, because I have people who will argue me to death that says organic means on pasture.
It depends on the animal. Like with cows, they do have to spend a certain amount of time on pasture. So if you
after
buy,
which They can be on
They can organic. Be grain fed. Yeah, absolutely. They can finish them on grain and then fatten them up like they're, you know, unnaturally
organic
fat.
Organic grain.
Right. Which is still, it is a step better than, you know,
GMO grain.
Right. So it is better.
How do you know
better,
it's organic grain?
You'd have to, I mean, it's like, that's why I buy certified organic feed. I want, because it is illegal for them to put GMOs in the feed.
So they don't desiccate. How do they harvest it? How are they desiccating it? Because don't they have, okay, I want to talk about that grain piece for a second too, while we're here. Don't they have to desiccate it with something to dry it?
You don't have to. I mean, you can let it dry naturally in the field.
Most, for a whole season?
Well, at least into the winter.
Who's going to do that? For 58 most, cents
right.
a pound.
See, and most farmers, you know, most wheat's grown on a massive industrial scale where the tractors are satellite driven for 10 miles a row and then they turn around and go 10 miles back that way.
But those farms will argue to death that they don't use chemicals on their land. But I don't believe for a moment that they're tying the bales and letting them ferment in the field
right.
while they dry for a whole season and then sell that mess for 50
Well, that's why, that's one reason, like, I choose to go with certified organic feed because I know the people that, most farmers that are growing organically do care about the quality of their product. Mm-hmm. Now, not all of them. I'm sure there's plenty of them that is purely a financial. They can get more in the marketplace for that product. But, you know, we go to a local farm here in North Carolina to pick up the feed. It's milled right there. I know the people that own it, and I, you know, they are trustworthy people. I trust them to give me a good product. Plus, I've, you know, I know that if they do have GMOs in there, that they're going to get fined massively. And so, not only is it just
but
me
can it be an
on
organic
integrity,
chemical?
There could be
to dry it.
I'm
just asking.
There aren't very many organic herbicides that are allowed. Like vinegar is a decent herbicide. At a certain, I think it's 10% vinegar kills pretty much any plant. It's almost like Roundup. But even at that,
vinegar?
Yeah, but it's a 10%. Like what you have at the store, you know, is like 2% or something.
Mm.
But even that's not allowed in organic. Which, you know, and vinegar to me, like if I were making it myself and distilling my own vinegar, then like I wouldn't mind using that because I know what's in it and that's not actually bad, you know. Like,
because they're using GMOs to distill to make the vinegar.
And that's one thing like we're planning on doing is taking parts of the farm that we used to lease out because we've quit leasing out to any farmers, like unless they're going to grow organically and sustainably, we're no longer leasing out any land, even though I'm not growing anything on most of it right now. But we're going to try.
You're sacrificing income.
Yeah.
And you're investing that back into real food.
Right.
This is what we're calling real food, guys. This.
And it's to me, it's almost better not to have, you always want something growing on your land. You don't want it just be plowed and nothing barren. That's terrible. That's the worst thing. I'd rather have weeds growing everywhere than nothing.
Well, the soil doesn't want to be naked.
Exactly. And that's one thing with, you know, not tilling. Like we're trying real hard to implement no-till, which is difficult.
I know.
But the thing is you've got those roots of weeds that grow through, you know, in between my crops, and then those are holding on to like the endomycorrhizae fungi and other various microorganisms that need these living plants to stay alive in the soil. And so even though they, you know, I'd curse them all the time, those weeds are benefiting the soil in the long run.
Which is why you don't fight them.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, you just...
We fight them, but we don't...
You just get mad at them, but... Okay, so I just pulled up the summary of provisions from USDA Organic, which I feel like these are the words that confuse people. Like, when they say things like, sets maximum indoor and outdoor stocking densities for organic chickens, which vary depending on type of production and stage of life. They sound like they're trying to be flexible, like they're trying to give farmers pliability to be able to be as innovative as they need to actually nourish these creatures, which they are not. And then on top of that,
they're giving enough flexibility so huge corporations can do it as well.
Right. Or to make it appear. So as an eater who isn't on a farm, who doesn't know anything about farms, who hasn't been to a farm who is, for whatever reason, like all of us have been lied to and done, had faith that grocery stores are getting their food from some farm, because where else would they be getting it from? I mean, I thought that way forever. Like, you know, the package would say all natural chicken. Well, what else is it? It could only just be a chicken. I don't know. Anyway,
and full of arsenic and antibiotics and caffeine and
right. And then people don't know that these birds are depressed because they're in the house. So you have to put them on drugs to make them eat. So they put them on arsenic to make them high so that they eat, which we might as well be on cocaine.
Caffeine keeps them up so they eat longer during the I mean, it's insane how they do it.
I mean, they're literally crack addicts, yeah. Right? Okay, and then we eat them.
And they're just shoved in. Like, even though they have more space in an organic production, they can pack them in those houses. I think it's legal for them to have the Seisman iPad.
It doesn't say. It just says certain physical alterations may be performed on organic livestock and poultry in order to minimize stress. What does that mean? I don't know. And then it says they have new... defines outdoor space and requires the outdoor spaces for organic poultry include soil and vegetation.
That's new. They recently changed that.
But...
Because it used to be concrete. They could have just an outside area of concrete and that considered...
Outside. Okay, which is fine, I guess, because at least they get sunshine.
They don't go outside, though. That's the thing, because they're these freak birds that are bred to live in a chicken house. And right. they don't do that well outside. Like, when we raise them, right? Yeah.
They're terrified.
When we raise them, and they can't move quickly because they grow so fast that their hearts can't keep up.
They have heart attacks, don't they?
Oh, well, they start falling apart. Right. They literally start getting gangrene. Their legs will break. It's awful. Okay. Because they grow from the day they hatch to when you process them is 8 weeks.
Oh,
2 months.
Eight weeks.
Yeah, and that's not natural for a bird to grow that fast.
And how long do your birds grow?
Anywhere from usually about 14 weeks is when we do it. Anywhere from 12 to 16 weeks.
God, that's like double.
Yeah.
That's double time. So,
I mean, still real fast. You know, I'm still like, I can't believe how fast these things grow. But
so the organic birds, the GMO-free organic birds in a barcode setting are still grown in the 6 days or whatever, 4 to 6 weeks.
In a Cornish hen at the grocery store, that's probably 5 or 6 weeks old.
I'm going to tell you something. Those little Cornish hens that were like the... kind of the delicacy, all these little butcheries and stuff, they sell it like as some type of novel poultry.
It's just a baby.
Right. People get upset with me when I say to them that we have veal, grass-fed veal. And the reason that I'm excited about the grass-fed veal is because if you're like a cancer patient or someone who's battling massive inflammation to the degree that you have a diagnosis, which all of us really are doing that, but someone who has like, you know, RA or MS or something very severe, or even Crohn's or IBS or whatever, then, you know, you shouldn't really have as many omnivores. And so, you know, veal is like the pork for these patients, you know.
As long as they don't keep it in a box.
Yeah, no, and our calves aren't, you know, but they're a side effect of the milk production.
Right.
You know, because that's the other thing. And so people will scream at me going, oh my God, that's so disgusting, Neethi. You want us to eat babies. And I'm like, you eat chicken. Can you just tell them, should we break it to them that they're eating babies when they eat chicken, like all the time? Isn't it?
I mean, teenagers probably.
Teenagers, guys. But those Cornish cross are like your babies.
Yeah. Those Cornish hen, game hen, quote unquote, at the grocery store is a Cornish cross that's young. It's a baby freak chicken.
I think we gave you guys a lot to marinate on, right? They have a lot to marinate on. Did we finish any of our conversations?
I think we're going to have a few more.
Okay, guys. I think that, you know, please tune in to our podcast and we'll catch you next time. Thank you so much, Hayes, for talking with me.
Well, thanks for doing what you're doing, Neethi.
We appreciate you so much. And thanks for nourishing the community.
Anytime.
leave an honest review about the show on iTunes and like and share our Facebook page. You can also sign up for our newsletter. And if you like the education that we're bringing to you each week, can you please help support our 501c3 mission to reestablish the regenerative organic small family farm food system by making it happen today with a tax-deductible cash donation? You can register and make a donation at www.farm2forkmeatriot.org. Again, that's www.farmtoforkmeatriot.org. And click on the donate button. I'm Neethi, signing off. Remember, let your farmer fill your prescription. Reboot, restore, and rejoice.